Did you know using your browser in incognito mode doesn't actually protect your privacy? Take back your privacy with IPVanish VPN. Just one tap and all your data, passwords, communications, browsing history, and more will be instantly protected. IPVanish makes you virtually invisible online. Use IPVanish on all your devices, anytime you go online at home, and especially on public Wi-Fi. Get IPVanish now for 70% off a yearly plan with this exclusive offer at ipvanish.com/audio.
This is Blue Moon. It's the original fan-made Manchester City podcast. Coming up, we've got news and views from City's week. It's your club, and this is your show.
After Manchester City got the job done against Newcastle at the weekend, I was promising myself that I wouldn't fall into the trap of watching Arsenal and tricking myself into thinking Bournemouth would get something. But when I was walking through town and heard they were 2-0 behind, I fell headfirst into that trap and actually spent Saturday night feeling a little disappointed at the outcome. Crazy, given how much of the season is still left to play, but I guess that shows where the stakes are at. Anyway, welcome to today's Blue Moon podcast, where we'll be reviewing City's 2-0 victory over Newcastle. Foden's back on form, Edison's got his 100th clean sheet, but De Bruyne seems to be struggling. We'll get into all of that shortly. We're also talking super subs on this week's show as well. Bernardo's goal against Newcastle is the 13th that a player has scored within 3 minutes of coming off the bench under Guardiola, so we've put City statman Adam Carter on the case, looking at the other 12. And just when you thought we couldn't go too deeply into the minuscule details of City's tactics, we'll hear from Tifo Football's John McKenzie on why we see centre-backs taking short goal kicks to Edison instead of the other way round. Don't ever say that we don't pay attention to the little details here. There's Palace and Leipzig to come, so we'll look ahead to those matches later on in the programme as well. I'm David Mooney, and for this week's show, I'm joined by the Manchester Evening News chief City writer Simon Bykowski.
Hello.
And City fan Gaz.
Hi, you alright?
Not too bad, thanks Gaz. Simon, you well?
Yes, very well. Always nice to be on.
Yeah, good. It's been a while actually. I think first time this year for you. It's been the other side of Christmas, I think.
I had noticed. I didn't want to say anything.
Everything's all right. I thought we'd let things get a little better performance wise before we brought you back. So
people always tell me I'm better in small what's the word? So this
bursts.
Is why I'm not on. I can't vocalise my thoughts. Doses,
yeah.
Yes.
Yeah, small bursts, small doses, one of those things. I don't know. Yeah. Either way. Let's talk Newcastle then, because, Gaz, I mean, my first question for the show is, did City control it well, or did they get away with it, or both?
I think controlling it well is probably the best way to put it. I think in the first half they were definitely the better team. I think going in 1-0 was the right result at half-time, but you got the impression if it was going to be a second, it had been City. Then they did have a good spell, didn't they, and come into it, during which we scored. So we got the second goal at exactly the right time, just as they were coming into it, I suppose. I mean, it would have been interesting to see what happened if we didn't score when we did. But
interesting. No, I don't think interested. I'm not sure I'd be that interested in how it would have gone.
Wrong word. Yeah, dispiriting probably.
Yeah.
So I think control's the right way to put it. It was an assured performance, wasn't it?
Yeah. Simon, how does that performance sit in the context of the last few weeks? Because I'm conscious that after the World Cup, City really had a dip. And it's really hard to tell when you're coming out of an inconsistent spell, because you don't know when it's over. So how do you think the Newcastle performance sat against what's happened in the weeks before?
Yeah, there were a few kind of mixed reviews about the performance. I very much enjoyed it. I thought that is kind of how you want City to be playing. I thought there was a lot of good stuff, continuation of the stuff that they've been doing in kind of the last 6-7 games since they lost to Tottenham, which was kind of very limp and labour. That was the thing. Like, it wasn't perfect performance from City, but it at least kind of felt alive and like they were trying. I kind of think as well, you've got to put it in the context of, say, you know, Newcastle were really knocking on the door around about the hour mark, and then City scored rather than Newcastle scored. And obviously, what was it, 2 weeks ago at Nottingham Forest, City should have won 6-0 and instead they drew 1-1. So that kind of has to be considered progress, that they sort of turned a potentially dangerous situation into getting more control of the game. So yeah, a very, very positive 5 weeks for me for City.
Yeah, I want to start weirdly with a game that City have won quite comprehensively. Like, so I want to start with the defence, because Gaz, he picked the what I call the defending defenders, the sort of defenders that you kind of go in and get the job done, but maybe hamper City in possession a little bit. How do you think they did?
Well, clean sheet. I mean, QED. I think, I always get that impression that, like, I think Diaz is our best defender in terms of defending. But it's almost as if, like, he's not in our best team. So I feel like he's, like, you know, whenever the team's not as assured as it could be, or just isn't in the proper groove, it looks like you say, we might be getting back into that game. I think Diaz is always the best option to include. And then it's almost as if, like, once we're in a rhythm, we kind of outgrow him a bit, and then, like, it would make more sense to have, like, a Stones-Laporte-type partnership who are just a bit more, you know, progressive on the ball and such. But while we're in a rut, I think he's definitely the person to bring in and stop anything daft happening, basically.
Yeah, Simon, the number of times where he just kind of steamed up the pitch and went, no, you ain't coming through. There was one moment and I think it was in the second half where, I mean, he hit the ball at the same time as the Newcastle player, and the Newcastle player kind of almost went out of play at the other end.
Yeah. He just has this sort of tremendous impact on kind of everyone around him and the opposition.
And opposition players.
Attack. Yeah. And it's funny with Diaz because he's probably kind of, when everyone's fit and firing, he's maybe more limited than other players, but he does kind of bring these old-fashioned qualities of just like loving defending and like really making sure you know, nobody is coming past him, whatever happens. And you've kind of got to be careful about like making too much of these intangible qualities and like appearing a bit gammony. oh, why aren't they getting a yellow card? And things like that. But it's kind of undeniable when you watch Diaz that he does just have those
qualities
that like the best centre backs in the league down the years have had. That is just no nonsense. I am doing everything possible to keep a clean sheet. And you know, the way he like congratulates and roars on his teammates whenever they make a challenge as well. It's pretty infectious.
Yeah. I wondered if the 3-all earlier in the season, Gaz, basically affected Guardiola's thinking for this one. And he decided basically we're going to put in the defenders who are going to stop them doing that sort of stuff. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah. I suppose on the other side as well, they did, didn't they? I mean, it was such a different match to that. It's almost as if they decided, you know, they didn't want a game which was so out of control themselves. So they adjusted as well.
Yeah. Just looking at the other faces around the back four, Gaz. I mean, Ake, there was a couple of amazing blocks from him, and it kind of cemented what he's been doing this season. How he's almost quietly gone about his business. Even though we're all talking about how good he's been, he's kind of quietly built himself into City's best 11.
Yeah, and I think what's most impressive about that is how he does it at centre-half and at left-back. You know, he's impressed in both positions. Got a few goals as well. Just been absolutely brilliant. I mean, I think... you know, if you were to do a sort of more considered rather than the obvious choice for player of the season, I think you'd be struggling to think of a better shout than him.
Yeah. Just on the flip side as well, Simon, Akanji's had a little bit of criticism lately, but, you know, a few errors in a few previous games. I thought he looked pretty good at the weekend.
Yeah. Talking about not being able to sort of describe people fully and why I don't appear on more podcasts. Akanji is just someone who is almost impossible to nail down. I kind of think with Akanji that you never really say Akanji's been great on his own. It always tend to be as a pair, which isn't to say that he's not had really good games as a pair. He just kind of sort of almost needs his partner for you to be able to say, yeah, Akanji's done well. But yeah, like, you know, there must be a reason that Guardiola keeps picking him. I don't think I'd place him at the level of Ake and Diaz at the minute. But he's still, you know, got plenty to offer. And yeah, he made a few important blocks in that Newcastle game. Yeah, I think the thing with Akanji is he's not the best at anything, which isn't necessarily a criticism of him because...
Bit of an all-rounder sort of thing.
Yeah, he is the all-rounder, but, you know, he's not got Laporte's passing, he's not got Diaz's no-nonsense stuff, he's not got Ake's kind of creativity and aerial ability. And he's not got Stones's sort of calm on the ball. So,
is he not the fastest one, though? I think that's probably why he's probably a good foil for Diaz, isn't he? Because I guess he's got covering him behind for that kind of stuff.
Yeah, I suppose so. I just kind of forget that because they've got Walker, I suppose. But, but he might be. And he is the best at maths, so there we are.
Yeah, if you need, not in this situation where Pellegrini can't work out if we need a goal or not anymore. Akanji's on the case now, yeah. Just in terms of going forward then, Gaz, Phil Foden obviously got the opening goal with the aid of a deflection, but it was caused by his driving run. How important has been getting him fit been for City's performances lately?
Just thinking about that Bayern Munich game when we didn't know any goal we needed to score. That would never happen again, would it, with a Kanji in the pitch? Foden, he's just been absolutely brilliant, and really, really hope this is and it seems to be as well the start of like a run now towards the end of the season where we can sort of ride in his coattails a bit. I kind of like that new position on the right for him, really suits him, and I think he sort of like still get all the benefits of him stretching the play because like he's disciplined, like he doesn't come in all the time, does he? He properly holds his position out there and stretches the pitch. But then when he does get the opportunity to come inside, it's pretty devastating, as you can see first.
Yeah. Is there a reason why you just repeated the Bayern Munich joke just out of interest?
Did someone make it? Or was that when I dropped off?
No, I said it, and then you just said it again. Like,
oh, did I?
Think,
yeah.
So good a joke, it needed saying twice.
It just needed repeated. I like that we're on the same wavelength. I just thought it was a bit odd that we got it twice, but here we are.
Sorry, I think there might have been some sort of interference in the feed, or I was just probably just too keen to say it. So, yeah. Leaves it in the cup.
Yeah. Simon, just on Foden, you spoke to him in the mix zone. One of the things he was saying in that was about how he prefers playing on the right. And I thought that was quite interesting.
Said that about him playing on the right.
No, I know. That's what I was building on now. I mean, we'll make the Bayern Munich joke again in a minute. what did you make of what he had to say there?
I thought, he had a lot to say first, which is... very unlike Foden. We rarely get to speak to him in the mix zone, so it was nice. Nice to speak to him. I kind of get why he prefers playing on the right, but equally he made playing on the left look very, very easily, very, very easy against Bristol City a few days earlier. And also he's still kind of pitching one day tomorrow to play in the middle. So I think, the thing with Foden is everyone is kind of agreed on that he is so good, he can play wherever. And that has sometimes been to the detriment of his career. He kind of became a wide forward because City didn't have an attacking threat when they didn't have a number nine, and it's kind of stayed there because he's been so good at it. I think he'd have been tried earlier in the middle if he hadn't been so effective out wide, but he is so effective out wide, and the thing is, when you see him give the Bristol City right back like a horrible time, and you're like, well, it is just Bristol City, but then he's that good, he can do it to anyone. And he did it to Dan Burn on Saturday, and he can do it to any team in the world. I was kind of impressed with his maturity around his injury as well, that he's continuing to manage.
I was going to ask about this because he did say in that interview as well that he felt pain again, and I must admit I winced a little bit when I heard that.
Yeah, and I kind of took it that he wouldn't be there speaking to us if he's gonna be out for 4 weeks. He basically, it's an injury that cannot be easily solved. It just comes back when you're not expecting it. If you're gonna keep playing football, then it probably gonna happen more often than if not. But City have had a week off. I think if they'd have had a midweek game, it might have been more of an issue, but I'd expect him to be available for Palace, although whether he's rested with Leipzig in mind, that might be something to do.
Yeah. Just go on Foden as well, Gaz. How does having him on the right instead of Mahrez change City's performance for you? Because I always think City look a lot wider with Foden there rather than Mahrez.
Maybe. I don't think they're too dissimilar, are they, when they play there? I mean, maybe I think Mahrez has probably got a bit more in the sort of habit of sort of linking up with sort of walk behind him, sort of checking, you know, checking back and then sort of, you know, like I say, holding it up and then, you know, knocking it inside and then going for another run. Well, that's Foden probably seems a bit more inclined just to carry it himself. But I don't think it's made much of a difference in terms of style. It's probably more in case of the fact that Mahrez is probably, you know, he had some good form earlier in the season. That's waning slightly now. So it's, you know, it's Foden's turn now, given the fact he's coming into a bit of form.
It does feel really harsh on Mahrez, given how he's played lately, that he can't get in the team at the moment because of Foden and Grealish.
Like I said, I mean, it did seem to... I mean, I really like Mahrez, but I think it did seem to wane slightly. So that's the reason why probably he's sort of lost his place. But yeah, he was fantastic on the year.
Yeah. Simon Rodri is... he's a phenomenon. And you forget when he's not there just what he can do. And I thought against Newcastle... I mean, Foden got man of the match, and I understand why. But I thought it should have been Rodri all day long.
Well, I thought it should have been Diaz all day long. So there... Rodri is sort of just unbelievably good, really, and he doesn't get the credit that he deserves. If you sort of see how quickly he's been supplanted in public perception as the best, well, has he ever been seen as the best holding midfielder in the
probably
league?
Probably not, no.
Well, that, you know, kind of tells you everything.
Sounds like an agenda to me.
It does, yeah. I think back to when they lost at Spurs, and I could not believe what I was seeing from him, where he was so, so bad. And not just like 19-20 bad when people get running past him, but like every ball he played just went straight into touch or to a Tottenham player. And I thought, Christ, like if Calvin Phillips is to be anything at City, he'll come on at half-time. And he didn't, and it seemed a real problem. And then ever since, Rodri's just gone like, yeah, you know what, that was a one-off. I'm just going to be amazing from now on. And yeah, he's so important, because you have kind of like Gundogan and Bernardo and a fullback kind of supporting him when he's necessary. But he's just, you know, over the last few years, his reading of the game has improved so much that he kind of doesn't need to make tackles because he's intercepting before... the opposition are getting the ball.
Guys, I mean, the other side of Rodri is just his ability to keep it under pressure is really noticeable. There were times on Saturday where he would almost like draw three Newcastle players in and just he'd somehow turn around and then suddenly have two or three passes on for him because of the way that he'd just manoeuvred the ball. His ability to keep it under pressure is huge for City.
Yeah, there's that. I mean, when you speak to fans of other teams who watch. They say that's often what they'll say. It's like, I didn't realise, you know, what... You have to sort of see it in the flesh, don't you? That kind of ability which he has. I think as well, though, like, I think he's just not... You can't even judge him as being a sort of holding player because he does loads in the other half as well. You know, I mean, if when the other teams sort of, like, come back, he'll trot another 20, 30 yards up the pitch and run the game from, you know, deep in their half. He's not what you'd call a... anchor man, and I think the amount of goals he gets as well sort of pays testament to that. You know, he plays at the back of City's midfield, but he's in terms of his contribution, he probably contributes more than any other midfielder in the league.
Yeah,
I think Rodri could contribute in anchor man as well. I think he'd look quite good alongside Will Ferrell.
Yeah, I've not seen it. I can't laugh along with that joke. I've never seen it.
I don't believe you.
I honestly never seen it.
Man City superfan Will Ferrell will not be happy with you.
Yeah, get him. We'll get him. If he comes on the show, I'll watch it. There we go. That sounds like a deal to me. Let's talk Kevin De Bruyne, Gaz, because I think it's pretty clear that he's struggling at the moment. What do you make of everything that's going on with him right now?
He does this, doesn't he? Like, I mean, but he sort of does it on the sly. He just sort of has sort of bad games. He's quite good as well at actually doing something quite often in a game he's playing badly in. Like, which one was it when, I'm trying to think of the performance he did when, recently where he scored one, but he was really bad.
Bristol City, because, he was terrible first half and then scored.
Yeah, so there's, he can do it. And I think, I do wonder though, if it's a bit of a function of the team that we picked as well, because when he's in a midfield with Rodri and Gundogan, like, he's got a lot less of the sort of number 8-ing to do, hasn't he? And it's more of a sort of number 10-ing. So it's, you know, he probably just sort of has it right in his head. Right, okay, I'm not gonna do the simple things today. I'm gonna do the harder stuff. So that might sort of play into it a bit.
Yeah.
But he's definitely struggling for form. But we've been here before. I imagine we'll be here again. Yeah.
Yeah. I was going to say, Simon, it's hard to judge him based on the numbers purely because that, like, generally he plays badly but still gets assists. So it's like, it's really weird to kind of see how it happens.
Yeah. When he almost sort of plays well when he should have 4 assists but no one finishes them. And then, like, on, you know, Saturday he should have had an assist but Haaland kind of headed wide from a few yards. Yeah, it's hard to get too worried about De Bruyne because, you know, like Gaz says, he just does this. I feel like he's done it a bit more than usual this season, but his kind of bang average is still better than most other people's very good.
Yeah.
So, you know, it's one of those. He will continue to play a lot, and if and when he does find form, then... people shut up about it.
He's
also not untouchable, is he? Like, he's got to a point now where, you know, Pep will take him off if it's not working, you know, or whatever. So I don't think it's less of an issue where maybe if this was happening a couple of years ago, he'd just still get flogged out there because, you know, he might do something. I think his sort of profile's changed a bit different.
Yeah, I mean, he got dropped for the Spurs game after poor form, and I mean, he was taken off on Saturday as well. And I mean, it was I kind of noticeable, wasn't it, Gaz? As soon as Bernardo came on, City had a lot more control of the game.
Yeah,
I mean, it helped that they scored pretty much instantly as well. But yeah.
And it was him that scored. Yeah,
yeah.
but obviously, this is what I'm sort of saying is that he's still a fantastic player in the squad, but is he? He's not the sort of centre of the team in the way we imagined was previously. It'd be interesting to see, won't it? Because, like, he's not... How old is he now? 31? Is he 32 yet? I mean, there will come a point when we do have to start making a decision as to whether, you know... There will be one of these losses of form, which will be the last loss of form, if you know what I mean. So it'll be interesting to see how we sort of respond to it.
Yeah. He's 31.
31.
Yeah, turns 32 in June.
He's not had the best luck, has he, in terms of injuries and...
He acts like he's 54, doesn't he?
Yeah.
Like every game is absolutely knackering to him.
Yeah. He's been watching me play. That's what it is. Just on Bernardo, Simon, how much of his performance? I mean, Guardiola said about he helped City lengthen their possessions, which I guess is the key to regaining control in the game. It was a weird situation where I kind of felt if De Bruyne had stayed on and City had scored that second one anyway at that point, I'd have still felt like they needed something to calm the whole game down. Whereas actually at 1-0 with Bernardo on, it felt a lot safer already.
Yeah, you wonder why you don't make more bloody substitutions, don't you?
I thought we were done with Gammon opinions on this week, Joe.
Gammon forever. I kind of think that... Bernardo and De Bruyne are obviously very different players. And so you kind of know when Bernardo's coming on for him, right? He wants more control and less kind of risk taking. And Bernardo is a player a bit like Grealish at the minute, because I feel like Grealish is in a sort of spell of form where he just never loses the ball. It just sticks to his feet. But Bernardo is another at the minute who you can just give the ball to and relax, because you know that whatever happens, kind of, you're not going to be worse off by the time he gets rid of it. It was really quite boring when City were playing so badly for a few months and all the sort of why are they doing it, and it's really boring to be like, well, loads of them are out of form, but you kind of see as more of them come back into form that is kind of a lot of what it was.
If you work as a manufacturing facilities engineer, installing a new piece of equipment can be as complex as the machinery itself. From prep work to alignment and testing, it's your team's job to put it all together. That's why it's good to have Grainger on your side. With industrial-grade products and next-day delivery, Grainger helps ensure you have everything you need close at hand through every step of the installation. Call 1-800-GRAINGER, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
Ad-free episodes are available on Patreon. Sign up at patreon.com/Blue Moon Podcast.
Now then, let's talk about Bernardo Silva, because he sealed City's win at the weekend just 2 minutes after coming off the bench against Newcastle. It's one of the faster goals by a substitute under Pep Guardiola, but it's by no means the quickest. We've put Adam Carter from statcity.co.uk to work to run through Pep's subs that have made an instant impact.
Bernardo Silva is one of City's most reliable game changers from the bench.
He helped us to make our possessions longer, and we needed to keep more the ball. That was up and down, a part of his intuition to make our high pressing and intuition to take the balls in the middle.
That's Guardiola after the weekend's win over Newcastle. Bernardo's goal, 2 minutes after coming on, wasn't even his quickest as a sub for City. He's got two faster. The first was against Shakhtar in 2018.
Bernardo Silva is being brought on as a replacement for Kevin De Bruyne. Mahrez. And Bernardo Silva! Oh, what sort of an impact is that? That is astonishing! Strolls on and takes the stage.
And the second was against Brighton in 2019.
And here is Bernardo Silva on the pitch and on the score sheet in the blink of an eye. Well, that didn't take him long, did it?
Both of those came within 60 seconds of his introduction, and the only other player to score less than a minute after being brought on by Pep is Nolito. He got the equaliser against Everton back in 2016. City drew, but deserved to win.
I'm sad for my players. They deserve to win the game. They did absolutely everything to win the game. But football is sometimes beautiful for that reason. So life is always trying to be fair on fair. And today we made absolutely everything.
Those four goals are City's quickest by subs under Guardiola, all coming under 2 minutes from the player's introduction. If we allow for another 60 seconds, then there are 9 more strikes to include as instant impacts. Of course, Bernardo has one of those, this one against Burnley in the FA Cup in 2018.
Bruyne, doing well to win the ball back. And look at that for a pass. Here is Sane. Pope has gone wandering. City must make it 4, and they do. Bernardo Silva this time.
2 sub-goals inside 3 minutes have come this season as well. Riyad Mahrez netted the winner quickly after coming on at Stamford Bridge, and Jack Grealish got the assist. He spoke to Sky about it.
I was just speaking to Riyad then inside, and he says to me, he was like, he thought the keeper was going to get it at one point, and so did I. When I've crossed it, the first thing, I've put my head down to cross it, and straight away I'm thinking, nah, Erling's got to be somewhere. Well, obviously,
so you're just hitting a space, are you?
I'm just hitting, because obviously he's always in there, isn't he? And I just says to him, I says, where was you in there? And he goes, because everyone went, he goes, I pulled back. But yeah, I don't know, I felt like the keeper was going to get it at one point.
A few weeks later, Grealish himself scored from the bench at Old Trafford. This was him speaking to Amazon about it later in the season.
You know, I want to come and affect these big games. You know, last month I obviously scored at Old Trafford to make it 1-0, and I thought, that was him. Like, you know, I'm going to get the winner here, and then, you know, we go and concede too. So it didn't really mean anything, the goal.
In previous years, Raheem Sterling was often good for an instant impact too. He scored 3 minutes after his introduction against West Brom in 2017. Here's Guardiola after that game.
Rice, again, another goal, 7 games, 7 goals. For Sterling, it's so important, right to the book. I would say they have a big gap to improve. So I would like to tell them, be calm. Score goals is so important, play good is so important, but still they can do better. They can do better. I don't have doubts about that.
Sterling then did it against Everton a year later.
Raheem, when he has no time to think in front of the keeper, is always goal. The problem has to think. And at the same time, doesn't score goal. But the cross was incredible action from Fernandinho and good finishing. Good header goals when we are not the tallest team in the massive team in the world. And but it's, you know, it's important to play a few minutes and score a goal for him and for everybody.
And Sterling did it once more to make the game safe against Club Brugge in 2021. That was the home game of that group stage, and only a few weeks after the away tie, where Cole Palmer scored within 3 minutes of coming off the bench.
Sterling with Mahrez making his way into the box. Cole Palmer is arriving too. Is this his moment? It is! Only just on the pitch, And there is his first Champions League goal. And he took it like a seasoned pro. Brilliant finish.
Cole has a special quality in front of the box, has this talent that is difficult to find. When he has the ball there, most of the time finishing the net. So his position is the second team, had to play there and winning games there, but in the same time he's training with us, he's taking the rhythm and our principles.
In Guardiola's time at City, there are two more goals scored by players within 3 minutes of coming on. The first was by Gabriel Jesus at Leicester in 2019.
Good run by Mahrez, and Jesus is in here and strikes! Manchester City recover from the blow of the missed penalty. And the man who replaced Aguero, Gabriel Jesus, comes up with a big moment.
And then, last season, Fernandinho did it against West Ham.
Jesus, and still, and Fernandinho bounces off the bench to round off a victory. A cool, calm, cultured finish by the substitutes. And that wraps up the 3 points for Manchester City.
That makes a total of 13 goals scored by City players almost immediately after joining the action under Guardiola. And almost half of them have come in the last season and a half. The manager may not make a huge number of subs, but it seems that when he does, it can really pay off.
Hi, this is Andy Morrison and you're listening to the Blue Moon Podcast.
If you enjoy the show, please give it a rating and a review wherever you get your podcasts.
That was Adam Carter looking at the goals from City's bench under Guardiola. Gaz, there's an argument that Bernardo is Guardiola's best impact sub because four of his goals from the bench have come within, you know, like 90 to 120 seconds of him coming on. He does have that quality, doesn't he?
Yeah. Yeah, I don't think there's too much else to sort of say in that regard. I suppose like you're a very intense player, isn't he? Probably the most intense player in the squad. So you're definitely going to, you can definitely sort of see how like you can have sort of an instant impact, particularly, you know, in a game which has begun to settle down.
Yeah,
he's a very hard player to pick up as well, even kind of when he starts. So you can imagine if he comes on that it takes opposition teams kind of a few minutes to get used to him being on the pitch.
Or he plays in lots of different positions, doesn't he? So I guess there's no problem. As soon as he comes on, it's like, well, where is he playing? Is he playing in the middle midfield? Is he playing on the, you know, on the out wide fullback these days? You know, yeah. I guess he kind of has for the opposition to work out, isn't it?
Yeah, and he does that thing where he gets the ball and just kind of like runs side to side with it, with a, like a line of players behind him, and just going, I'm not going to pass it yet. Now is the time to pass it, and it just like it seems to attract everybody towards him and get space elsewhere.
I believe it's called Pauser.
Yes. Yeah. I just want to play this as well because when we talk about super subs, this came into my mind from a few years ago. It's nearly 10. Well, it is 10 years ago now. It's Edin Dzeko talking about being a super sub.
Before I came to City, I used to play from the beginning, and I scored a lot of goals, not as a sub. In the last few games, a situation like this, and I'm just happy that I'm scoring goals, but I will never be a superstar. I want to play.
The thing is, what I really like about it is that he's making his point really passionately, then he misspeaks at the end and it just kind of undermines everything.
Nobody wants to be a super stub.
Yeah.
I like how he makes his point like subtly at first and you can see what he's getting at, and then he just and then he just explicitly says what he was meant to be saying anyway, just to hammer it home.
Yeah. Right, it's time to look ahead to the game with Crystal Palace and Leipzig for City now. I'm going to bring in Crystal Palace fan and comedian Andre Vincent. Vinny, you've been good?
Oi, oi, not too bad. I'm enjoying football at the moment. I mean, it's just so good, isn't it? Those teams that you think are going to really struggle suddenly do really well against Dortmund. How did that happen? And I'm sure you've been talking about it. Yeah, I mean, after a week of, we're back, oh, we've won a cup, we're back. Oh, I was so happy. I mean, I don't like the Scousers at the best of times, but oh, I was dancing. I was dancing.
It was funny because I was when on Sunday I'd take a draw because I don't really want Liverpool to get into the Champions League and I don't want United to catch City. But then as the goal started going in, I was quite happy with it. It was all right.
Oh, and some of the stuff that's been said. I mean, it would have been worse if we'd lost 3-0. Oh yes.
Pleased if anything.
Yeah.
Oh, I mean, it must be difficult for you lot not to just want to rub it in, but it was fantastic.
Anyway, we've not got you here to Bertie about United. We want to know about Palace. So
we're not. I'd like to hear more from Vinny.
Oh. how many times have you spoken to me and I've said my team is run by a manager that is a 13-year-old playing FIFA?
Pretty much every time you're on, I'm not going to lie.
It's getting worse. It is embarrassing at Selhurst Park.
Yeah, but you're a thorn in City's side. So, like, what bullshit's going to go down this weekend? That's what
I know. I know. Look, I can't help it. You know, I still Townsend's volley is still one of the things that, you know, I constantly get an erection about. we have those moments and we can do it. We do it to you. We do it to Liverpool just when it's needed. You know, we upset the apple cart, but I can't see us upsetting anything. We have learnt that we like 12th place and we're going to stay there for the rest of the season.
Yeah, nice and solid. Nice and solid.
We're just hanging on. We've got that Aston Villa dream now of mid-table mediocrity.
Gaz, just in terms of City going to Palace, as I said, often a thorn in City's side. What can you do about it? Is there anything that it's just like, because I worry that it just gets into Guardiola's head.
What can he do? I don't know, I suppose. I mean, I guess we've had these bogey teams before, and I guess you just have to work through it, don't you? I don't see any other way than that. But they are probably a team that, like, in my head and in the esteem of City fans, are probably better than what the league table suggests. Yeah.
Simon, do you feel like Guardiola, Palace are one of those teams where Guardiola really respects them in like sort of in that Guardiola way where he tells you like you know, Bournemouth are the best team at doing this or something like that, and then you watch the game play out and you go, God, actually he was right about that.
Yeah, and especially under Vieira, Guardiola's gonna rate them. My favourite Palace story in recent years is when City paid for like free bus travel down for fans, because it, you know, the back in the day when like it being hard to get to and from games was actually a big thing rather than like every week, but because City were making a big thing about it, they waited to have pictures taken with somebody before the buses set off, and the buses were then late and the Palace were already 2-0 up by the time the fans arrived. So it hasn't always been a very happy hunting ground.
Yeah.
Well, it'll be it's a late kickoff, isn't it? So it'll be buses back, I guess, because there won't be any trains.
Yeah, exactly. Well, let's hope they're not 2-0 down.
Yeah.
Then as well.
Yeah, Vinny, I was looking at your record. It's 7 without a win at home at the moment, but yep. five draws.
Five draws.
Like, what's Selhurst like for you to like? What's going on there at the minute?
We have. I think we've got a cracking defence. I've got to say. You look at them and they just bubble. They really are great. But it's, as I've always said, for the last, you know, three seasons. Ever since we signed, you know, Benteke, you were talking to me. We've never had anyone up front. We can't do anything. We've got nothing there. And it just worries me that we, you know, that they can't look at it. And again, you know, we have a transfer window. We buy two more midfields. We've got so much midfield. It's incredible. The speed of them are fantastic. But, you know, you've got Alesse running. You've got Zaha running. You've got Eze running. But it's just really, really sad.
Yeah, are you in? Like, do you feel like you might be in relegation trouble? Like 5 points above the bottom three, but in 12th.
Yeah, it's only what is it, 6 points? It just takes a couple of games. I mean, you know, a turnaround. Yeah, I mean, but that's what being a Palace fan is. At the beginning of every season, you're always thinking this could be it. I mean, Sky have actually done it. Was it Sky or Amazon did an actual decent series about the flight of the Eagles actually getting up. It's something that part of being a Palace fan is you're always thinking, looking over your shoulder, going, well, we'll be back in the Championship. And, you know, we're too busy looking at trying to buy a new part of the stadium as opposed to buying a striker.
If you work as a manufacturing facilities engineer, installing a new piece of equipment can be as complex as the machinery itself. From prep work to alignment and testing, it's your team's job to put it all together. That's why it's good to have Grainger on your side. With industrial-grade products and next-day delivery, Grainger helps ensure you have everything you need close at hand through every step of the installation. Call 1-800-GRAINGER, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
You can listen to the show ad-free by joining our Patreon, patreon.com/Blue Moon Podcast.
Gaz, we talked about Bernardo and De Bruyne earlier on in the show. Would you dare drop De Bruyne for this one? Is it the sort of game where a bit of magic from him, no matter how out of form he is, could be the difference? Or is it one of those where you actually want the control that Bernardo might bring?
I suppose there's a residual issue, isn't there, with the waveform in general, which he's not figured out how to deal with. Probably is a game for Bernardo, yeah, particularly given how he came on and made the difference against Newcastle at the weekend. So, yeah, why not? Again, it seems that De Bruyne could probably do with a bit of a rest. So, I would be in favour of that. Yeah.
Yeah, Simon, positions up top, it feels like his settled front three at the minute is Haaland, Foden and Grealish. Is that, again, what you'd expect?
Maybe, but I mean, as you've said, Mahrez hasn't done a lot wrong to get out the team. Mahrez has generally been kind of like Mr. Champions League for City. But maybe for
Leipzig then.
Yeah, but if, you know, he has gone with Grealish, Foden and Haaland quite a bit recently. So maybe if that's his preferred three for Leipzig, then Mahrez will come in for one of Foden and Grealish for Palace. Mahrez screams Palace as well.
You've got to put that up front because we are such star shaggers down at Selhurst. They will go, oh, look at them. Hagar the Horrible's up front. Oh, we're so happy. Really. You'll easily win with that, and there won't be that much noise from Homesdale end because they'll just be impressed by seeing them on our pitch.
Yeah, what was that moment like in the first game, Vinny, where you realised that Haaland was just going to go, no, I am winning this game.
It was just when he just makes those little breaks and just pushes off, just pushed off Gaye, just like, no, not, haven't you? Yeah, oh, you think you're going to? No, go away. It was such a sort of slight push as well, and he went flying. it was like a real sort of like slight Queenie Barbara. Get out of it. Yeah. Yeah, he's a cracker, isn't he? Man.
I wonder if, given the game the week after, if it's actually Haaland that might get a rest in favour of Alvarez. He's not been exactly right on top. I wonder if you're sort of looking at it dispassionately, you know, he's the one who could probably do with a break.
Yeah, I don't know. How would you feel, Vinny, if you saw World Cup winner Alvarez lining up instead of Erling Haaland?
Oh, they'll be really upset at the Palace. If Hager doesn't come on, they'll just be like, no, we've been looking forward to the Viking. And the Saxons will just put down their axes. They won't be happy.
Yeah. What's the mood around Vieira right now? Because I mean, I've talked to you for several years about different managers that you've had at Selhurst, and like Vieira started really well, but I'm worried that, you know, having not won since the turn of the year, it could start to turn sour.
But it's like we knew he was going to stall simply because management are going to say, you know, they're always saying, this is who we want you to buy. This is what you've got to look at. We can't afford that. And as soon as, you know, we knew he wasn't looking at strikers, it was like, well, where can he go? And he was moaning about it. Well, my hands are tied. They won't let me buy what I want to buy. And it's so difficult. I think when a manager's told that, I mean, all those years ago, you know, why we lost Pulis? Because exactly that. They were so busy being a sort of like a board that has so much to say. Because it's this amalgamation of businesses that have bought Palace and so many people chip in, it's so difficult for, I think, a manager to actually start a structure and create. And that's why I've always seen, I said, it's like a kid playing FIFA.
Yeah.
It's big names and you know, people that were stars at Palace fucking decades ago.
Yeah. Gaz, for City, in terms of, we talked earlier on about the style of defending and, you know, the difficulties with having the defending defenders and ball playing defenders. Where's the balance for this one? Because City find Selhurst a tough place to go. You know, you'd expect the crowd to be up and there to be pressure on. But it kind of, like we said, it kind of hampers City if they don't have the Laporte or Stones to break the lines.
Yeah, I think probably the choice in defence will probably be more, given that you said all the talent for Palace is out wide, to have the proper, the more defenders out in the fullback position. So yeah, the other two take your pick, I suppose. But I think it's not a game for Rico Lewis, put it that way. Or anything like that.
Yeah, Simon, will a Champions League game on Tuesday change his thinking at all? Like at the back four, just because of how key that Leipzig game is.
I think it could, but at the same time, you know, they have had a week off and it's kind of a nice real time for the managers to say, look, if you want to win every title, play two games in 3 days for me.
Yeah. What was his line? We are tired, fuck off. Was that his line?
You are tired, fuck you.
That was it. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. So, you know, I'd kind of think 7 or 8 would be the same. And yeah, it will just ask them to go all in at Palace and go all in at against Leipzig, and then they've got kind of 3 days, and then they've got an FA Cup game against a Championship team where he can make more changes.
Yeah, if only there wasn't a massive story around that game, that might that might distract, you know. But here we are, Vinny. If you are going to break your drawing and losing run at home, who are the players that are likely to do it for you?
I think for me, it will be, if we have that moment, it will be a break. It'll be young SA come on after 70 minutes, be the wonder sub that he is, and create something. But I can't see there being anything creative myself. We're just not strong enough. These new two midfielders that he's using, I've not really seen any magic from them at all that he's promised. It's not good. It's not good. I'm expecting you to either absolutely plough all over us, or the boys put up the bus and it's a 0-0 draw.
You know what? I feel horrible saying this, but the way you're speaking and the way, having seen your results, it kind of reminds me of Stuart Pearce's final season at City, where there was absolutely no creativity, no reason to go there every week, and yet somehow we still turned up hoping for the best.
Yeah, it feels like that, doesn't it?
Yeah, so roll on the inevitable home win this weekend then. charity bet time. The total on the charity bets now £705 for this season after Adam Carter's correct 2-0 prediction on last week's show. So helping the Man City fans food bank support group, who are collecting for Manchester Central Food Bank. William Hill gives each of us a £10 correct score single on City's games. So let's start with that Palace game. Vinny, what are you having for this one?
I've got to go 2-0 your boys, I think.
2-0 is 11-2 and £55 if you are right. Gaz, what are you having?
3-0.
3-0 is 8-1 and £80 if you're right. Simon, I feel bad knowing full well that I've asked you to change your predictions so much over the course of this week. What did you go for in the end?
I've gone for 4-1, having been told that I could have neither 2-0 or 3-0.
Yes, there we go.
It won't be that.
But
4-1. We scored a goal!
Well, wait for this, Vinny, because if it finishes 4-1 and you do score that goal, it's 20-1, £200. I think that's I think it's your goal that's bumping the odds up on that one.
We're all hoping for that scoreline, yeah.
Yeah. We'll quickly run through the Leipzig game as well. I've gone for a City 2-0 win, which is 7-1 and £70. Simon, what are you having?
2-1.
2-1 City is 8-1 and £80. Gaz?
3-1.
3-1 City is 11-1 and £110 if you're right. Remember, you've got to be 18 or over to gamble. Prices can change. And for more on gambling responsibly, take a look at begambleaware.org. Vinny, it's been a pleasure. I love chatting to you about Palace.
Oh. Come back next season. Well, you probably won't,
Well, we might both be in the championship, yeah.
Yeah.
I can't believe there was actually dreams of Europe by our fans at the beginning of the season.
Yeah, I always remember there was a City thing in 4-4-2 years and years ago about the back-to-back promotions in 99 and 2000. And there was whoever had written it had done a perfect job of summing up the situation where they talked about the summer of August 2000, where they said City signed Paolo Wanchope. They brought in former World Player of the Year, George Weah. Even the manager was talking of a top six finish. And then the next paragraph just started, City were relegated again. Vinny, absolute pleasure. Thank you very much, mate.
See you later, bub.
Now then, every now and then, a video will emerge of teams from up and down the football pyramid playing out from the back, and people joke about Guardiola's influence on the game. City have been doing something slightly different with their play from defence since a slight tweak in the laws of the game in 2019. Previously at goal kicks, the ball used to have to leave the penalty area, but now that it doesn't, we often see an outfield player passing it short to Edison. I've been speaking to Tifo Football's John McKenzie to find out what advantage that little manoeuvre gives the team.
Yeah, this is something that I get asked about a lot because it doesn't seem to be a huge amount of benefit for any team either way, right? If you're playing a pass often about 2 or 3 feet sideways and ending up with the ball at the feet of a player who you'd expect to be worse on the ball anyway. But I think to explain this best is it's best to think about what the opposition are doing in those situations. So if you're a goalkeeper and you're going to try and build up from the back, you're going to try and find one of your setbacks with the ball from a goal kick, you're either going to pass the ball right or left, because usually the two centre-backs who are going to be in the first phase of build-up are going to be on your right or your left. And if you do that, then what you're doing is essentially handing the initiative to the opposition press, because if they're going to press really high, they know exactly which side of the pitch you're going to be going through with your build-up. A lot of teams, when they press high, what they try and do is they try and split the pitch in half, force the ball onto one side, and then use that as a smaller area to then engage in an aggressive man-to-man press. And so if the goalkeeper were to take the pass from the goal kick to the right, you then know that you're going to be pressing towards the opposition anyway, are going to be pressing towards their left-hand side of the pitch. So you're giving them the initiative in being able to do that, vice versa with the other side as well. But if you have your centre-back take it towards your goalkeeper, you're now in a neutral situation. So the goalkeeper can still go right or left in the build-up. And it means that you're in a situation where you're actually able to control the opposition press a little bit more. You're able to stop them from taking that initiative from the first pass. It just gives you a little bit more scope as well to go either way in your build-up. And in theory, it should make it easier for you to actually move the ball down the field.
Yeah, I mean, just in terms of the law change, because the law changed in about 2019, I think, if that was when the ball no longer had to leave the penalty area. It feels like such a minor change to the laws, but actually, has it changed quite significantly the way teams like City or I mean, for example, Liverpool do as well with Alisson?
Yeah, I think so. I think when we talk about build-up, we talk about two phases of play. One of them is unsettled possession and one is settled possession. And unsettled possession is obviously when you are trying to possess the ball, but you feel as though the opposition is still able to get the ball from you quite easily. And you would hope to move from that first pass from the goal kick into a phase where the opposition then drops back if they're going to press high. Gives you a little bit more space and time on the ball. So that we would call that a settled possession. And obviously, like the change in the rules that you're talking about meant that we went from a phase where unsettled possession was actually a lot more up for grabs, right? If you're having to pass the ball outside of the penalty area, you're having to make that first pass much more speculatively. It has to go a greater distance, and oppositions can press a little bit more easily in those things. So by making the rule change back in 2019 such that you have a certain amount of time where you can protect the ball before the opposition can arrive at you, because no one in the opposition side is able to go into the box before the ball is kicked, it moves you into a phase where it's actually much easier to get into settled possession than you were before. So I think that's probably encouraged a lot of teams to actually experiment with build-up, because you're not having to be quite as much of a gamble moving from an unsettled phase, and you're more likely to reach a settled phase in those moments. So I definitely think there's been a long-term knock-on there. And like you say, these things seem so simple at the time, like the back pass rule as well is a great example of that.
I was just thinking exactly exactly that, yeah.
Yeah, the offside rule as well has changed in different ways, and these things always seem so innocuous, but then if you were to go back before that rule was made and look at the way that football was being played, it's just completely different. So, yeah, another example of a rule change which actually has a really big knock-on to the sport in general.
Yeah, I always used to find it odd that in the old setup of the laws, that obviously if a defender touched the ball in the penalty area before it had left the penalty area for a goal kick, it was a retaken goal kick. Mm-hmm. And I always found it odd that teams would accept the pressure of opposition pressing them instead of just going, actually, I'm under too much pressure, I'm just going to touch it inside the penalty area, yeah, and make them retake it. It seems like one of those really progressive moves that actually, it's like you say, it's helping other teams kind of set up and play from the back in a way that they probably just wouldn't have done before. And I mean, in many ways with City as well, when City have possession at the back in open play, they're quite happy to have it inside their own penalty area and quite happy to be pressed inside the penalty area because it does open up that space a bit further up. So this is, I guess, just another kind of facet to that, is it?
Yeah, I think so. The most interesting thing I think I've picked up on this season with City's build up from goal kicks is that they've moved from that the sort of standard Arsenal setup that they have now, where you build up with a flat back four and one of your fullbacks inverts. And one of the things that seems to have happened this season with City is they don't even bother with that inverting phase now. You play with either Rico Lewis or Bernardo Silva as one of the pivots next to Rodri, and they drop out in the defensive phase. But in that initial phase of build-up, you have this really cutesy setup where the centre-back just stands right next to the goalkeeper, and then you have the other two centre-backs really, really wide, and you're getting all of the width there. Now, it helps if you have a goalkeeper like Edison, who is essentially like an outfield player, right? So you're still playing with a back four effectively, and it gives you advantages further up the field as well. But that's the thing that's really stuck out for me this season watching City play is them having obviously the inverted fullback this season using that structure, and then actually not even bothering to invert the fullback and just keep them as a central midfielder who drops out in defensive phases.
Yeah, it's wild to me that Guardiola's taken the centre back taking goal kicks from Sunday League, because that's, you know, I grew up with centre halves taking my goal kicks for me because I couldn't get it out of the penalty area, so there we go. I mean, the final thing, John, is are we seeing teams take fewer long goal kicks these days just on the basis of, like, for teams like City, they want possession of the ball, and as soon as you put it up in the air in a long distance, it becomes a percentage ball. You've got to go and win it. Because the thing that I really want to see, and I don't know if this is just too route one and basic of me, but Edison's got a kick longer than anybody else in the Premier League. You can't be offside from a goal kick, and City have got Haaland there now. So get a goal kick. Yeah, sure, they can build up from the back sometimes, but stick Haaland on the opposition penalty spot and see what happens. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah, interestingly enough, I think in the FA Cup game against Arsenal, that was what happened. Arsenal went player for player across the field out of possession, and they left Rob Holding on Haaland on his own. And yeah, we saw Stefan Ortega just taking that kick right over the top and see what we could do with it. So there's definitely a time and a place for a long goal kick, but as you say, the downside to that is that there are going to be games where certain teams are going to want to control the ball, and if you play the ball long, it makes it much harder for you to do that. But for many teams, the threat of playing through an opposition high press is enough that they'll just not even want to countenance that, so they will play the ball long. But yeah, interesting to see that there are scenarios where Man City as well are happy to play that ball over the top. If Arsenal are going to go player for player and they've got a really aggressive forward press, why not just isolate your strongest player against a centre back and see what you can do with them?
Email the show through our website, bluemoonpodcast.com.
That was Tifo Football's John McKenzie talking about goal kicks. Don't ever say that. We don't do the little details on the show. Going to finish with an audience question. Get in touch for next week on Twitter at Blue Moon Podcast. You can email us as well through the website, bluemoonpodcast.com. Simon J on Twitter says, will the backlash to Jamie Carragher and Gary Neville in Sunday's Liverpool versus United game lead to better and more impartial TV coverage of City's games? They both wear their colours on their sleeves, and yet City-orientated pundits like Micah Richards tone down their association to the club. Gaz, what do you reckon to this? I thought that as well.
Wow, I'd like to see if you ramped it up a bit. You know, got a bit more enthusiastic.
But it's funny because there's United fans who say Neville is impartial, and there's Liverpool fans who say Carragher is impartial. So it does make you think.
I mean, Gaz, what do you make of it in terms of club related pundits, I guess, on coverage? Because the backlash is always that Carragher and Neville get City's games, but ultimately they just get the big games.
It's starting to do my head in, to say the truth. I think the thing is, I think Neville and Carragher are actually really good pundits, and you can see that when they have a good dedicated sort of clear-headed amount of time to talk about it. You know, M&F, you know, the show after a Monday night football game is really good, and they go into lots of detail. The problem is when, like I say, when they're sort of commentating on their own teams, because they sort of get inserted into the narrative of the game themselves. You know, what will he say about this? What will he say about that? And it's just really, really annoying. And like, I think the problem is particularly with, like, take Neville for example. I mean, like you say, you'll have United fans who will say, "Oh, he's trying too hard to be balanced," but they only ever sees the game through the sort of prism of United. So they're playing well or they're playing badly. The other team doesn't really get any sort of regard, do they? That's kind of the issue. I think we need to sort of just move on again from it. There was obviously like a big revolution when Gray and Key we were sort of forced to move on from that, and I think it's probably time again, really, or at least, like you say, at the very least, just stop commenting on Cubs.
Yeah, Simon, is it difficult for City in that there's probably nobody other than Micah Richards around that has the sort of stature that you'd want for a co-commentator for City?
I suppose. I mean, I feel like Neda Manure is one of the best pundits around, but you're right, he doesn't kind of have that clout or high profile that some of the others do. It's just a really difficult thing. I mean, you know, when I watched the overlap after City's Premier League charges, and you know, Carragher seemed to be asking really uninformed questions and had really uninformed opinions, like, you know, why don't they just publish everything if they're innocent? Which is like utterly stupid, but then probably spoke for like what a lot of people were asking. So, you know, in that sense, like the having that kind of coming at it from not just a non-City angle, but an angle of other clubs, like there is merit in it. I don't like the fan cam press box stuff, and you know, it is a shame that, you know, for online media as well, like it's almost more important to see what Gary Neville or Jamie Carragher have said than, you know, the people who you employ. But it's kind of just a sign of how big they've become.
But I think they get a lot of positive reinforcement, don't they, on social media for this kind of stuff. You know, people saying, "Oh, lol, look at what, you know, Graham Souness has to say and stuff." But I think a lot of people watching at home probably just find it a bit unedifying, really. And you know, it's not as if anyone can watch it anywhere else. You can't compare Sky's coverage to somebody else. At the end of the day, it's one of the biggest matches of the season, and that's where you're going to watch it. And you'll only know if it's got better or not if you sort of change it or move away from it. I think the best example is like when I distinctly remember when Keys and Gray got moved on. There was genuinely like, well, oh gosh, what can we do? You know, these people are so, like, you know, synonymous with it. And then they realise, oh, hang on, actually, it can get a lot better if you just think about it. And actually, the way it got better is it stopped being so matey and actually started pitching it at a bit of a, you know, better level. So don't insult people's intelligence so much by thinking this is what people want just because you're getting a load of engagement off it. It's a different thing.
Yeah, what they ought to do is have a podcast that gets no engagement whatsoever.
Is that right? Well, there you go. I think as well, just like, you often hear like some City fans, like you used to hear, "Oh, we need to get our own guy in there." And you think, well, that's just not going to solve it, is it? I mean, otherwise you're going to get like doing the same thing, because you can't take exception to partial coverage and then say, well, we just need more partial coverage.
Yeah,
you know,
we need our partial coverage.
Exactly. It's just like,
But then I think, you know, like BT kind of fall into the trap of like, well, we have got City coverage because we've got Steve McManaman. And you're kind of like, yeah, no.
I like it when you get like a Champions League night with City legends Steve McManaman and Owen Hargreaves on the panel. Well, BT just resolve all this just by talking about referees for 99% of the time. Yeah. They just ignore everything
else. Yeah.
I think there's another revolution coming, isn't there? There was one about 10 years ago. You get the feeling that we're on the edge of another.
Yeah.
We'll see how it goes. But for now, that brings us to an end for this week's Blue Moon podcast. Thank you very much for listening. And thanks to my guest, Simon Bykovsky.
Thank you very much.
And to Gaz.
Nice one.
We'll be back next week. So I'll see you then. Take care.
That was the Blue Moon podcast. Please give the show a rating and a review where you can. And don't forget, you can listen without the ads by signing up to our Patreon. You'll also get an extra episode each Monday. Here's a clip of this week's.
Most of my family, most of my cousins and stuff are United fans. So I've had it all my life. And they all absolutely loved that banner. They thought it was so funny that there was a banner up in the Stretford End with that little ticker. They kind of had the Ferguson belief that, you know, not in their lifetime would they ever see City reach success. So that banner coming down was wonderful for me personally. It's such a snide thing to do, such an absolute arrogant United thing to do. And a few years ago, it was the Centurion season actually, when City were doing so unbelievably well. One of my mates I was in the pub with, United had lost. And one of my mates asked me, did I not feel any sympathy at all to United's kind of plight? And I laughed in his face and was like, man, no. I was like, no, I don't. And I never, ever, 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 ever will. Like, yeah. You've had a banner.
You deserve this. Yeah.
Yeah. You had a banner up in the Stretford End about City's barren years. And it was always the arrogance of the fact that it was like, it was quite clever to give them their dues, the dickheads, like, but it wasn't just celebrating the fact that we had barren years. It was celebrating the fact that there would be another barren year next year.
You can listen to more of that at patreon.com/Blue Moon Podcast. And join us again next time for another episode.